Dr. John Steinbrecher became the MAC commissioner on March 16, 2009, so we're entering his sixth year. And on that date in history, March 16, 1995, Mississippi formally ratifies the 13th Amendment, becoming the last state to approve the abolition of slavery. The 13th Amendment was officially ratified in 1865.
The only two schools to not play at the MAC championship in Detroit are Eastern Michigan and Western Michigan.
Welcome to Tuesday Night Lights. Welcome to Tuesday Night Lights, Hustle Bell's Mac Football Side Podcast. I'm Alex Alvarado, your host, and with me always, usually, again, for some reason, but following me is Brandon Fitzsimons.
What up?
Brandon. Ew, gross. Brandon, did you ever have, like, an athlete that you really, really liked growing up for no good reason whatsoever, except for maybe just name recognition, and who would it be?
I mean, I grew up a Colts fan, so Peyton Manning or Sammy Sosa, you know, I also grew up a Cubs fan, Sosa. But really, I can't recall ever just liking a player just to like him. I was alive for, you know, Michael Jordan's dominant years, but I don't really remember them, so I can't really say Jordan or anyone like that. But
I can't understand why, like, I was a big fan of Tony Clark, like, who used to play for the Tigers, and he was just kind of okay. I don't know, for some reason he was just some guy that I liked.
Mark Grace.
Who's that?
That was the Cubs' first baseman around the Sosa years.
Ah.
Yeah, so.
And that was your boy?
That once you said Tony Clark, I immediately thought the Cubs equivalent would be Mark Grace. Mm-hmm. Loved by everyone. Not that big of a guy, you know. But, yeah. So.
Yeah, that was my guy. I don't know. I mean, he was okay, but he just wasn't that great, I guess. I don't know. Oh, well. But, let's see. All right, well, thank you all for listening. So we, at, like, the bottom of our articles for this, whenever we go up, we will be including the, like, a Google form of hashtag Hustlebag. And basically all you do, you ask us a question, we'll answer them on the air. And, yeah, so just do that, fill it up. Sometimes I will, like, later down the road, just, like, spice it up and give you, like, a themed thing to respond with, I guess, to make this a little bit more fun instead of just a ask us however the hell you feel like it sort of deal. But we have one response from somebody that writes on the blog, Jordan Renard, and I think we should just do this right now. What are the top five MAC games in 2016? And I think, well, Brandon and I, we both wrote down five of our own. I just answered this however the hell I wanted to. I just took the five games in MAC play that I'm looking forward to. That one aren't rivalries, and two, there are five of them. And, like, mostly, I'm just going by intrigue. How did you select your five?
I kind of went with intrigue as well. Although I kind of did take rivalries into consideration, and it only what looks like appearing to have thrown one rivalry game in there. But in the terms of the MAC slate, you know, how the MAC might shape out, that's really the five I was looking for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Either in the East, the West, both, top, bottom, just games where I thought would shape the MAC the most
in
the final standings.
All right, And I think, like, one thing that we both, because we were talking while we were both doing this, and I think one thing that I had mentioned was, you know, I didn't want to go too heavy into the West, because there's been the there's been the Mac West race for a number of years now. Usually there's like 3-4 teams that are in it.
Yeah, last year we had 4 teams finish tied for first. So that's just crazy.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's like pure like records go. Obviously, like tiebreakers break NIU into it, onto winning it. But, yeah, and like this year, like, you know, obviously we should expect more of the same. You know, NIU, they don't look good, but that means they'll be good. Central, they look really good. Western, they look really good. Toledo, they look really good. We didn't want to pick like Central versus Western, Western versus NIU, NIU versus Toledo, Toledo versus Central, Central versus, you know, whatever. Like, it's just easy. But as you were saying, to the East.
Yeah, the East really seems wide open this year. I mean, you see Bowling Green, they lost a lot. They lost, you know, a lot of offensive weapons, a little bit on defense. They lost their head coach. So you really see the East open up this year. Ohio, they looked all right down the stretch last year.
Yeah, like after like they had their injuries resolved, because I think that caught them into like a 3 straight losses, which really, you know, put a screwdriver in that. Akron looks good too. They're coming off like an 8-win season, won the Potato Bowl. Like any picture of Terry Bowden in a bag of potatoes, it's pretty funny. Buffalo, you know, who knows what the hell they're going to be. Maybe they might be good. I don't know.
It's the second year. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Martin is third at Miami. So, what are the 5 teams that, or 5 games that you picked?
In no particular order, I really like BG Ohio. Obviously, okay, to shape up the East, you know, we'll see if Ohio can come back and, you know, win the East again. They haven't been to the MAC championship since 2011 when they lost to NIU. They've been there 3 times. They haven't, you know, they haven't won the MAC championship in Detroit yet.
Uh-huh.
This could be their year, given everything that plays out. Obviously, you still have to go through Bowling Green because they still have a decent amount of talent on that roster. So
it's much less exploding than it was last year.
Oh yeah,
and the year before that. So yeah, they lose a lot of good firepower, and that's on Saturday, October 8th.
My next game, the Central Western rivalry. It's right up there with BG Toledo for the, you know, one of the biggest rivalries in the MAC, or the mm-hmm. biggest rivalry in the MAC. Oddly enough, I didn't include BG Toledo this year. Just I think mostly because how lopsided the rivalry has been, and then now BG is losing a lot. It just doesn't seem, you know, that tasty. I feel like we all feel Toledo is going to win that game. Western Central, though, Central won 6 straight games in this rivalry up until 2011, and then since then, Western's won 4 of the past 5, the only loss coming in 2013 in the 1-11 season, and even that was a close game. So Western's really kind of had taken back the rivalry a little bit. Now we head to Mount Pleasant, where Central Michigan hasn't beaten the Broncos since 2011 on a goal line fumble.
But they look really good this year.
Yeah, both teams look really good this year. You know, right up there with Toledo for who we expect to really contend for the MAC West in terms of talent-wise. If you throw in intangibles, then you have NIU in there. But whoever wins the Central Western game, obviously, will have a nice step up heading into the rest of the MAC slate, and that's really early in the MAC schedule for both games, or for both mm-hmm. teams to really set the tone early on. I prefer this rivalry really not be at the beginning of the MAC schedule, but mm-hmm. it is what it is. It started last year, and we had a barn burner. You know, 41-39, Western holds the ball for the last 8.5 minutes. Or 8 mm-hmm. minutes? Either way, they held the ball for a long time to run out, you know, run out the clock. So, always an exciting game, and this year it looks like he'll definitely have more, more stakes on the line.
Yep. So, how many of them did you list? Did you list all five of them?
I'm at two. My next game is Ohio
Toledo. Let's speed this up.
Yeah, my next game is Ohio Toledo. Obviously, Ohio, like, you know, like we said, Ohio really came on down the stretch. Toledo lost two games in November to go from undefeated, possible Group of Five champion, all that, to not even making the MAC championship game. Can the Rockets turn around under first year coach Mike Candle? Jason Candle. There's too many new coaches. Mike Jenks, Jason Candle. Yeah, I had my BG Toluca. Anyway, so we'll see how that, you know, that game shapes up. That could be a nice crossover game. Both teams are competing for their division. And it really, both teams could really need a win at that point. Obviously, especially if BG happens to beat Ohio, really don't have too much wiggle room in the East because of how how weak the bottom is. Mm-hmm. Expect Bowling Green or Ohio or a school like Akron to really make a run. I really think we see one to two top teams in that division, and then the rest are 4-5, 3-4, 3-5 candidates. The rest,
right, and then who do you got for the last game?
Oh, my next two, obviously Toledo Western, to end the season. That should be a big MAC West game. Really don't have to go too much into that. And then my last game is Miami Eastern. Well, a nice crossover game. Eastern, it's time to show progress, and that's late in the season. A nice crossover game. It's a winnable game for both teams. Chuck Martin might have his team up to 500 or near 500 at that point and playing for a bowl game. They might not. They might be struggling, and Eastern might be able to win a game in the MAC here. Obviously, we don't know what might happen with Ball State. They lost a couple receivers. They do still have Riley Neal, but Eastern has perennially been the seller team in the MAC West. And for them to kind of get out of it, you got to win games like these. The crossover games against the inferior MAC East.
I feel that. Because you should definitely beat guys like Miami that have not been good for a while. I think I've got five. Two of them, Akron is on the road. Two of them, Central's on the road. And then the last one is Eastern. The two Akron games are at Ohio and at Buffalo. And I think that's just like all that just kind of blends in with the, like, I don't know, the middle of the pack from the guys that might end up being bottom feeders in the East, and who can just have a pretty decent 2016. And like Akron, obviously they're coming off the 8-win season, but they lose a lot on defense. They keep their quarterback, but like how decent, but like I don't know if he's even good enough to keep up a second year. Like I still don't think he's, I don't think he's just that good of a quarterback.
I don't know. I mean, he played the offense well enough last year to, he got him wins. He didn't do spectacular things, but he did enough.
I guess. I'm just not sold on him. Anyways, and then my two Central games are at NIU, because Central has this thing where they can just beat NIU.
They have the kryptonite.
Yeah, and it's really weird. And Central at Miami, for a lot of reasons that you already said, but less so because Central doesn't have to make the leap that Eastern's being pressured into. like Central's good. Central could win the West. And they should definitely do so against Miami. And on the other end, Miami, you know, I hate going through non-conference play and always using the other side as a measuring stick. Like you have a 3-point loss to, like, name a Big Ten school, like Wisconsin.
Okay.
Okay, so you're, like, pretty much, like, just as good as, like, where Wisconsin is. And Wisconsin's, you know, they've played in big-time games very recently. They're still a really prominent program in the Big Ten. And if you lose by 3 to them, then you're pretty damn good in the MAC. But I don't like using that as a yardstick, you know, because, you know, like, even when Akron, they lost by 4 at Michigan, like, Akron still wasn't very good. It was just, like, a really good game against two bad teams.
That's true.
So,
I remember that game. Yeah. That no-call in the end zone.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, man, sorry, the fans. It still hurts us, too.
I always, whenever I think of that game, I always think of the one dude with the mustache that's, like, who's going all, what's it called? Surrender Cobra? And he has, like, a mustache. I don't know. Like, if you just Google, like, Akron, Michigan football images, like, football, like, Google images that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And my fifth game, and all of this is, like, in no particular order, but I am saving the best for last. Eastern at Ball State. Because last year at home, Eastern was up 17-0. And then Riley Neal comes in, and then they put up 28 unanswered. And now that Ball State is under a new coach, Eastern's in their third year with Creighton, first year under new defense. It's just going to be really interesting to see, like, how this shakes up. And like I said, like, I hate the whole measuring stick thing, but this is, like, within a division where, like, you want to be ahead of Ball State in this division. Like at least for Eastern, because Ball State's been, like, 4 or 5 for the past few years. And, you know, like, Ball State's going through so many changes, you know, it'd be nice to say that, hey, we're legitimately, like, on the incline while one is declining.
And like I said, Ball State, obviously, they return Riley Neal. They get Darian Green back, James Gilbert as a nice 1-2 running back duo, but they lost their top receivers. Who's Riley Neal going to throw to? What's Mike New going to do with this offense? And then will the defense be any kind of good? Because, you know, last year we saw Ball State versus West. You know, I personally watched Western knock Ball State around. They set a, you know, program record for most yards in a single game, fewest yards allowed. Ball State didn't look competitive at all, and now you take away their top two wideouts, and I don't know. At the same time, you know, Eastern, they do have to make that jump. Third year under Chris Creighton, Brogan Robeck's a senior. It's time for them to shine, and beat Ball State, really put yourself in position to finish fifth in the MAC West, which, yeah, it doesn't sound good, but given the state of the MAC West right now, fifth is a win for either Ball State or Eastern Michigan.
I don't know. Like, I think, like, that would just, like, that depends on so many things. Like if you're fifth and, say,
if you're fifth and you can also, let's say,
what's that?
If you're fifth and you can also win some crossover games, that's the other
right. So, like you could have the top four. Like, you could have just like last year. Like, there's four teams that are 6-2. But if you're, like, you know, like 3-5 at fourth, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, even if, like, your two wins are, even if, like, two of the wins was against, like, Toledo and NIU, and then, but, like, you'd lose, like, to like Bowling Green or Buffalo. Like, at that point, it doesn't matter. Like, to be a good, like, I think for either of them, really, you gotta get to 4-4 in the conference play.
But, I mean, that's saying you beat the other one, and then you win three crossover games, yeah, or you steal one out of the big
four. Right, right, you know, you're right. From the right.
big four. So, but, which either is possible because, you know, Central could be inconsistent. We didn't think that they'd be as good as they were last year. Could they possibly mm-hmm. progress? Western Michigan has a tendency to, you know, come out slow. You know, we saw Eastern Michigan play them real tough for a half, and then the third quarter came over, and Western went lights out. But then Western also kind of laid the egg against NIU, who was down to their, Drew Hare was already out. Like, he got hurt 2 weeks prior. A week prior? 2 weeks prior?
It was the week before NIU Ohio. I think it was the week before.
Yep. Well, the week before NIU Ohio was the Western game, and then I think the week before that was the NIU Toledo game. And
that's right, yeah, because, I was at that damn hotel. Yeah, he got hurt there, and then, yeah.
So, I mean, Western has a tendency to kind of play down, but then they also have the tendency to go on the road and beat a top 25 Toledo team. They also have the ability to completely shut down Ball State. So you kind of still are waiting for the consistency out of Western. Toledo, we'll see, because they're going to have a new quarterback this year. They replaced a couple pieces at wide receiver, but they're still stacked, everywhere else. And then NIU, what team are we going to see? Are we going to see the team that won the MAC West? Are we going to see the team that almost gave away the MAC West? Are we going to see the team that put up 34 total yards in the Poinsettia Bowl?
Hopefully the last one, and hopefully that happens against Eastern.
Yeah, so I mean, stealing one against those four isn't impossible. But you know, even if you steal one, even if you beat the other one, Ball State or Eastern Michigan, depending on which team you are, then you just have to win two crossover games, which in the East. So definitely a good chance to, you know, make your stake as the fifth or fourth best team in the division. And then depending on how you do in non-conference, that's how you get to bowl games.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back for more stuff about commissioners. And welcome back. It was a long hustle bag answer that we had for, but like, it was like five games. It wasn't like one game. If he would have asked like one game, but yeah, just keep asking. We won't go like so far into length on these anymore. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well,
it'd be cool if like we had if we had like 10 questions at once, that we could just like have like one episode. And just like do it
rapid fire,
yeah. Or like we can just like have like a whole episode just on a really good hustle bag question. So help us out.
Your questions,
yeah. Also on the break, Brandon sent me a picture of the Mustache Michigan man, and he wasn't going Surrender Cobra. He was just kind of like the one scene in Mean Girls where. Regina George was like dressed in their like sexy rabbit outfit, and the dad was taking pictures, and he was all like, "Oh no, that's what he looks like." I really like Mean Girls, by the way. I don't know if anybody knew that. You knew this.
I did. I don't get it, but I did.
But anyways, one topic that we saw. Literally, like, this is, like, a month ago now. but I don't know, like, I finally got a chance to just, like, think about it a little bit over the weekend and sort of digest it a little bit more, but this is, like, really hard to do research on, at least in my opinion, was the question of the, as this ESPN article headlined by Adam Rittenberg is, does college football need a commissioner? Brandon, what would you envision the responsibilities of a college football commissioner to be?
Well, I mean, obviously, I don't think we'd have to have a committee almost, because one person for, you know, almost 130 schools is, it's hard to keep track of making sure everyone's happy. But you know, whether it's a commissioner or a committee, obviously, you got to look at rules changes, scheduling, like, regulations almost, so that
if you're
Michigan should not be playing eight games at home.
Right.
LSU should not be playing eight games at home.
Yeah. And Pittsburgh shouldn't be saying, like, we will never schedule a G5 school.
Right. You know, things like that. So scheduling, obviously, player safety, academics, things along those lines that the NCAA kind of looks at now, but college football might need to look at more closely based off of just the popularity of the sport with regards to, now we're talking college students, student athletes, you know, depending on how you want to look at that side of the coin. And then I guess we got to start looking at fairness. You know, obviously we're starting to see the divide between the Power Five and Group of Five start to grow for almost no reason in some aspects. And just trying to keep that parity alive. But that's where I kind of see a commissioner or a committee, that's where they would struggle mightily in their duties, trying to separate what's best for the Power Five versus what's best for the whole group.
To one point, there is a committee, and it's the Football Oversight Committee, and it's still new. Like, this is like 2015, I think it was introduced. Maybe it was a little bit sooner, but and in that ESPN article, like the guy quoted a whole bunch of people, like, you know, talked about the whole deal with banning satellite camps, and like that was a big ordeal, and you know, ADs would go in, or commissioners would, like, go and vote one way when they told coaches a different way, and it really pissed a lot of people off for, like, as stupid of a topic really is. So that was, like, a big reason for, like, people saying, like, you know, there should be more pressing oversight on this, because the committee is not going to really do this too much, because the 17 people aren't going to meet together all the time like this. And have their schedules, you know, intertwined, because you do have, like, seven athletic directors on here. You have one, two, three, four. There's an assistant commissioner. Oh, five. Wow, there's, like, five conference commissioners. One of them is John Steinbrecher. And then you got, like, head coach, got student athletes. So, like, the committee is, like, formed of, like, you know, people from different backgrounds with different needs and wants, and so on and so forth, because, you know, what's their other driving motive? You know, what, like, because they're not just hired as committee persons, they're hired as, you know, these other titles that I just said, and also they're on a committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have, like, different needs and wants.
They have their own agendas, yeah.
Right, yeah. But, and, like, the point is to, like, you know, to oversee safety and all this other stuff across college football, but clearly it's just not strong enough because, yeah, you have 17 people, but it's, and, like, they're all from, you know, you got the commissioner, you got John Steinbrecher, you have Arizona State's AD on there, you've got Nebraska's AD on there, you got a student-athlete from UCLA, another student-athlete from Towson, there's a wide range in there. Dan Mullen, the Mississippi State head coach, he's on there. You do have a wide range in there as well. It's not just a bunch of P5 heavy things. And the commissioner would just be like one figurehead that would basically be, in works with, you know, they'd have a lot of discussions with the NCAA and like what they're about to do. And, I don't think the commissioner would be like above or below them, but it would definitely pull more of a checks and balances system into it. More immediately, more directly. And, I don't know. Don't know where I was going with that, actually.
But you
could have, like, one commissioner, but, what's he responsible for? Like, everything you said, the scheduling, this, that, and the other, but also, like, time management for student-athletes. But, you know, all the responsibilities that people might throw out and be like, well, what about this? What about that? That you would say about the commissioner. Well, shouldn't that also be delegated to other conference-wide commissioners and, you know, schools and their responsibilities? Because that should be something, too. Like you obviously don't want something... Let's take the Texas Tech incident where the dude was locked in a shed for hours. You know, like, that should not fly through the Big 12. That should never have... like, you know, it ever happened in the first place, obviously. Obviously, it's not, like, a lot of... I don't know if, like, you know, how many people were... knew about it or whatever, like, that worked at Texas Tech, but I can't imagine many. And I can only imagine the wrong ones knew about it. And obviously, no one too responsible. But you can't have anything like that happen. And you gotta, like, figure out a way to, like... like, is the commissioner going to be responsible for punishments against figureheads in other areas, like, you know, like a head coach or like a student athlete or like an athletic director or like a conference commissioner?
So, are you saying the commissioner going to have direct responsibility for, you know, policing incidents by coaches and players and conferences? Are we looking at a checks, you know, kind of a trickle down where the commissioner penalizes the conference for not doing anything for a player or coach or administration?
I think you look at a commissioner and you say you deal with it, but it really shouldn't be up to him. He should, you know, it should be a figurehead that's acting as like a one body, like Supreme Court, if anything had to come down to it, I guess. And like everything would just be like so, what's the word I'm looking for? Never unprecedented. There's the word. But I think one thing that you said that I liked, and we had talked about it a few days ago, and let's say they did want to have a commissioner for these responsibilities because the 17-person big round table is not good enough and you need someone more direct. There's 130 FBS schools?
128, I think, but...
128? Let's just say, like, 130.
Yeah.
Like, just to, you know... That's a big number. And, like, that's a lot of traveling for one person. And if if they went through with this, my hot take is, say, three people. It cuts down on stress. It cuts down on traveling on one body. And really, like, there's, you know, you have to come to a 2-3 decision on something if it ever comes down to it.
And I do like that checks, and, you know, it kind of does help, you know, relieve some of my worries about possibly being a top five or a power five heavy. Because if you go through and read the ESPN article, it does really focus in on the power five's needs and things like that. And, you know, what's good for this power five team, or what's, you know, this part, and it has a couple quotes from the group of five. It has a direct quote from Steinbrecher, but if you have one central figurehead, it's really easy for him to get sucked in. I feel like my worry would be that he gets sucked into what's, you know, the concerns for the power five over the group of five. And if you have three members, you could obviously say, all right, this guy will focus on the Power Five's needs and wants, this guy will focus on the Group Five needs and wants, and this guy will try to be outside and focus on the overall impact of the game. And so you kind of have three different sources, you know, some overlap, but different areas, and then you still have a little bit of that worry, but at least you have a voice. And each group could nominate, you know, their candidate or whoever. But as long as there's a known voice, a known representative on the table to represent this, you know, the group of five, because right now it just kind of seems like their voice is being drowned out by what the big five conferences want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll. Yeah, let me read the excerpt of the where you said the Steinbrecher was quoted, and like it's in the section called "The Case Against a Commissioner." Placing a commissioner atop college football sounds nice in theory, but critics say the sport simply isn't structured that way. We don't operate in a world of dictatorship, Mid-American Conference Commissioner John Steinbrecher said. At the FBS, you have 10 conferences, each with its own hierarchy. We all interact with each other. It's unrealistic to think a model with one person at the top could work. And then the Big 12 commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, who is the chairman for the Football Oversight Committee. The idea of having a commissioner over football is probably imposing a structure over college sports that is better in place for a professional. Which is, I guess it's true, but I don't know. I just, that also smells like a silly answer.
But when we look at a commissioner in the, you know, major sports leagues, you know, the NHL has 30 teams. The NBA has 30 teams. The NFL has 32 teams. You know, baseball has 30 teams. I know I screwed up the count on at least one of those conferences. But, you know, we're talking about one guy to oversee a 30-team conference. If we combine the four major pro sports, pro sports, and that count would not even equal how many college football teams we have. And you're basically saying one man will oversee the major four sports leagues.
Right.
It's not a comparison, but it is, because you have each group, you know, like Steinbrecher said, you have 10 conferences. Each does, you know, kind of has their own way of doing things, and none of it's wrong. None of it seems to be wrong. Each conference seems to be going well, and it has been for years, other than the American Athletic Conference, who's new to the table, but they're coming from the Big East. But, you know, you have conferences that are years old, decades old, and I don't know, I just don't see one figurehead being able to do it all.
Yeah, I think that kind of went into what I said about just having three, because it's a lot of traveling for 128 schools. Like, you can't even visit, like, each one in the span of, like, you know, like, not that you should be going to all 128 schools, but, like, in the course of one regular season, right? I think that's, yeah, I don't think you could do it in one regular season. And, like, and you definitely shouldn't have just a P5 one. Like, because if you just have a commissioner for P5 to control its autonomy, and, oh, yeah, there's the G5 that's also D1 FBS, then what the hell is the point of a commissioner if the main goal of a commissioner is to, you know, be a driving force for all things, for things to be better for the state of college football? Because you just want the integrity of college football. I think the best lead that I wrote to something like this, and this was in NOLA.com. The best lead, it was just one sentence, and it said, college football stopped being college football a long time ago. Yeah. And how Rittenberg focuses is on the satellite camps. The author for that one, I'm going off of memory, focuses a lot on the recent arrests at Alabama of their two players. So, not that that was really going to change anything, but, you know, it's just like a different thing if you want to check that out. Maybe I'll link you in. Maybe I'll just make you Google it yourself. But yeah, like, you definitely can't just have one person do it, because that is just way too much. And really, like, you shouldn't be focusing on, you know, not everyone's going to have, like, the equal rights to fulfill everyone's needs. Like, Eastern Michigan and Alabama are two different ends of the spectrum, and one's going to have much more privileges than the other. So you can't, you know, be worrying about that, but you can worry about, okay, is too much going to the SEC? Are we not giving enough balance to the Mid-American Conference, to the AAC, to CUSA, to Mountain West? You know, are they getting the respect that they deserve? Because there's a lot of television pointed at the SEC. Is CBSSN something that the MAC can live with? Is this something that will help out their exposure? Because bringing out more out of the G5 would be beneficial to not just, you know, not only to their business, but not only to their schools, but to college football as a whole. Because the SEC and the Big Tens and the Big 12, they'll get theirs. They'll get paid. Like, they will definitely be rich tomorrow anyways. The guys wearing suits will be in suits next month.
Right. Forever and always.
Yeah. But I don't know. Those are like, I mean, they're like, you and I aren't like complete experts on this whole thing, gasp, but it's still like, it's just like a weird thing to think about, because it's not like we have anything to base this off of. We don't have, first of all, we don't get to even look at other countries to see, like, how have college football commissioners done in other countries, because, one, other countries don't have American football, really, or at least not to this popularity that we have in America. Two, we don't see other countries with varsity college athletics.
Right.
So, and to have, you know, a huge figurehead for football, and this does go to basketball, too. But, like, since, like, those are the only two sports that are the dominating forces for bringing in revenue to schools via athletics as a whole. Like, those are the ones that need the policing the most. I think, like, my favorite quote in this ESPN article was from Butch Jones. And he said, there's a great need for leadership. And I'm like, okay, Butch Jones. All right. You do you, man.
That's a man talking.
Yeah, it's just like, all right. Yeah.
Speaking of leadership, okay. Man.
Right, yeah. This week, and leadership is needed elsewhere. Butch Jones has a thing to say about other programs.
But, I mean, the commissioner also might be tasked, I guess, with the committee. Has college football, has the FBS outgrown itself? Look at the rise of popularity of college football, and, it's really, the number of schools in the FBS has ballooned in recent years.
And rest in peace, Idaho.
Yeah, well, they're they're the first example to drop back down, but, growing up, I think, we had 90-some schools.
Yeah.
And then we just keep adding more and more. Now we're at 128, and it definitely seems like the Group of Five is on its own level, but would the commissioner be tasked with kind of separating that and saying this is another, redivisioning? But I don't know.
I definitely,
very complex situation.
I'm definitely with you on that. There's like way too many schools, and football stadiums are built way too big. There's not going to be that much care for Division I football, as a whole. Like, people are kind of set in their ways of like who they're going to watch. So, I definitely. I didn't think of that. Like, a commissioner could be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Not to say that you're not deserving, but you're not going to be helping by coming up. So, that's something that I didn't really think of. Do we want to wrap this up with plugs?
I think it's time to plug.
Run off the plug.
Plug it up.
I am going to plug a little small bit of news on a personal front. I've had votes for the Mid-American Conference basketball polling, and I finally reached out to Ken Mather to be voting in football as well, since I go to a lot more football games, even as a neutral person, because I go to all the Eastern home games, and I've gone to Toledo 4 times and Bowling Green once and Western once, and I've been to a bunch of MAC championship games, so I asked if I could be included in that, and Ken said, yes, you may. So, thank you, Ken Mather, and Mid-American Conference, and obviously Hustle Belt and the Raiders, because without either of them, I wouldn't be able to have this honor. But, yeah, so that's a bit of news. I get to vote on something coming up in, I think it's July, for the preseason polls.
Ooh, congrats.
July or August.
But you're going to tell me that you're pregnant or something.
No, I was saving that for next week's plug.
Oh, damn. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue to plug weird things, and I'm going to plug food trucks.
Food trucks, okay. What are you? Because you're in Detroit now, so you get to eat, like, tacos.
Yeah, well, I mean, even back in Kalamazoo, like, there was a weekly thing in the summer where downtown they bring in a bunch of food trucks, and that was the first time I'd ever really been experienced to them in my lifetime, and that was some good food. Now, where I work at, in Detroit, we, every week, usually on one day, they'll bring in, a food truck, and I think this week we had two back-to-back days, and because I'm budgeting, I couldn't stop at them. Today was Delectable, and I had a meeting today, but I looked it up on the menu, and it looked so good, and I wish I could have gone. So
did you get to have any yet, or no?
No, I can't wait to go to one, though. As soon as I get paid, I'm going to make sure I get some money so I can go to one of these things. Because my first day, apparently, there was a Woodfire Pizza one that we just walked past, and yeah, and we went to TGI Fridays instead. Which, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was alright, but Woodfire Pizza out of a food truck sounds a little bit more appetizing, so.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna plug food trucks. Keep doing you.
And, you do you, food trucks.
As long as you stay delicious.
As you said. Well, yeah, Goldie, you had the ones at Kalamazoo, so. Yeah. Food trucks, Mac football voting. I'm not pregnant yet. Well, I think that's all the time that we have today, so thank you all for listening. Please subscribe to Tuesday Night Lights any way possible. We really appreciate it if you shared us around these interwebs, if you told a friend about us and filled up our hustle bag questions. Hopefully by now, if you're listening via our article on hustlebelt.com, that you've already submitted like 8 of these. So that'd be really cool. And if you have the chance to rate us, give us at least 5 stars. That way you can get a 5-star safety in your next recruiting cycle. And that safety will help you beat your rival school, or at least just Central. If you are Central, he will help you beat yourselves. Like Hustle Belt on Facebook, facebook.com/HustleBelt, and follow us all on Twitter at Hustle Belt, and mine and Brandon respectively at AR Alvarado 13 and at Bronco Fitz. Yeah. So get out of my house.